The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
Good afternoon. So nice to see all these faces here. I recognize a fair amount of them, not everyone. I just want to start off by saying that I stand here as a mother like the rest of you. I know there's some husbands in here as well, and that's fine. Welcome. My prayer is that this session will be an encouragement to you all. Yes, I've probably been mothering longer than most of you. I just wanted to say that 6 out of my 7 daughters are actually in this session. So they are probably the biggest reason why I'm here to pass this on, and they are my greatest encouragers and inspiration to run this relay race, which is what it is, right? Motherhood is like a relay, and you're holding the baton. And so as you, some of you may be in the first generation of this race, where maybe you didn't have an opportunity to be raised in this way, and so it's all new to you, and you feel like you're stumbling through a lot of this stuff, but keep going. Like, don't give up. Keep taking the steps. Even if you stumble, just get back up, pick up the baton, so that when you pass it on, if you have daughters, then there's going to be a reward there. As I wrestled through the preparation of this session, because it was a wrestling, the weight of it would hit me, and the only way I would find any release was to just to give it back to the Lord. And on several occasions, I had to get out of bed, middle of the night, about 4:30 in the morning. I'd be wide awake, and I knew it was the Lord saying, Vera, I've got something for you. So I'd get up, walk to the living room, and start scribbling notes. So I made a lot of notes, because I know that if I don't follow something, I'll probably go off on some tangent, and I don't want to do that today. So bear with me as I kind of go through what I have here. There are so many aspects of motherhood we could talk about. From the joy of bringing a baby into the world, and we all love talking about that, to watching them grow up, and the nearly infinite moments in between. My focus today, along with sharing bits of my story, is to help you catch a clear vision for motherhood and homemaking. This is something that the Lord laid on me several years ago. I was at the conference, and I was at the graduation recognition, and a lady came up to me afterwards, and she said, I'm so encouraged to see your daughter up there saying she wants to become a mother and a homemaker, because I feel like we're a Christian homeschool conference. We need to be talking about this, right? There's not a lot of direct commands to women in scripture. We have a lot of commands as far as believers, but commands to mothers. And the one that I always go back to is that one in where is it? 1 Timothy or something. I'll get to it later. Anyway, so I just hope to encourage you to pick up this torch called motherhood with renewed strength and with a renewed hope. So first of all, I just want to take a quick look at what the word joy actually means, because sometimes we can have this kind of surfacey, you know, idea of what joy is. And the dictionary, Webster's dictionary, says happy. So that seems a little bit shallow, right? But biblical joy is actually choosing to respond to external circumstances with inner contentment and satisfaction, because we know that God will use these experiences to accomplish his work in and through our lives. So that's a lot deeper, right, than just I'm happy. We need to have an eternal view of what we're doing. The word mother, God defines a mother according to her purpose. Her purpose is the one who binds the family together. I dug a little deeper. When you look at the Hebrew origins of the word mother, you see that in the original pictographic script, the first letter is the picture of an ox. As the ox is strong, the letter also has the meaning of strong. The second letter represents water. The two letters give us the meaning of strong water. It's interesting, hey? So where this comes from is the Hebrews made glue by boiling animal skins in water. As the skin broke down, this thick liquid would come to the surface, and they would remove this, and it was used as a binding agent, strong water. This is the Hebrew word meaning mother, the one who binds the family together. And haven't we heard that term over and over again, right? The mother is the heart of the home and everything like that. Families are very important to society because they are the foundation society is built upon. As mothers, we have the amazing opportunity to not only bind the family together, but to raise the next generation. This is why we must have a clear vision for raising daughters who will be prepared for this great task. So before I go any further, I just want to share a little bit about my own story. So I had one short story that came up in my mind was, I was a newly married bride, and my husband Jim was at work, and I thought, okay, I'm going to cook supper, which is what homemakers do. And unfortunately, my mother had not taught me how to cook. So I decided to do chicken. So I put chicken in the oven, and I don't remember how long I baked it for, but it was a crisp. So my husband comes home from work, and I think that's the one time he said to me, should we do Wendy's? Which I was glad for. So, you might have a hard time believing this, but I was actually born into a very traditional Mennonite family, and I didn't know how to cook. So, I was raised in this environment for my first 14 years, and the only dream I had was to be a wife and mother. When I was 14, however, my family was uprooted and we moved to the city of Winnipeg. We joined a church family that didn't openly esteem motherhood and family life very much. I'm getting some feedback here. Okay, I'll try that. I just feel too loud. So in this new setting of being in the city, and my parents put me in public high school, so now I had gone from a small Mennonite community in a private school to the north end of Winnipeg in a public high school. So that was like culture shock. I didn't even know what to do with myself for the first little while. But in the years that followed, the few years that followed in high school, I felt the pressure to find a career and to get a degree in something. And I had all kinds of dreams of, well, maybe the medical field, or maybe like an astronaut, or like I was good in math and science. And so I thought, well, yeah, I could do something like that. But deep down, I knew there was that vision still for being a homemaker and a wife and a mother. But I felt like slowly that vision was being stripped away. So I met my husband when I was in high school, and I still knew that that's what I wanted to be. But I realized later on that the years in public high school, during those years, the enemy had built a stronghold in my heart. And according to my teachers, I was very smart and had lots of potential for a successful career. When they asked me what my post-secondary plans were, I told them I wanted to marry and raise a family. And they literally stared at me, shook their heads, turned around, walked away, and said, "What a waste." And that really struck me because I had spent the last 3 years working hard to please those very teachers. Like, that was what I was doing. And so that stayed with me for a long time, and it haunted me for years. And I struggled deeply about my calling, that I knew my calling was into motherhood. I had already been blessed with at least 4 children after a few years. And I came to a place where I knew I needed to know once and for all that I was doing what God's will was for my life, because it was always still kind of eating away at me. And I just came to a point in my life where I just got really desperate with the Lord, and I took some time. I just cried out to Him with all my heart. I said, "Lord, I need to know, because I can't be struggling back and forth about what my calling in life is. I'm raising children." And it's so ridiculous, because it was obviously my calling, right? But I still had that battle in my mind. And I'm not into like visions and dreams and all this stuff at all. But in that very moment, a picture popped into my head, and I just want to share with you what I saw. It was just a massive fortress in front of me, and its walls were all broken down. And there in front of it, I saw myself lying on the ground with gorgeous, rich grass all around me and growing out of my body. And all around me and in the grass were my children playing joyfully. And to this day, that just that picture is there as clear as ever. And I knew that that stronghold was broken. And I knew at that moment that my daily dying to self would not be a waste, as I had been told. It was a lie. I was finally free to give myself wholeheartedly to motherhood. And now I just want to talk a little bit about, so where we're at in our society. So we can get so caught up in preparing our daughters for post-secondary education. That's what the conference is all about, right? You find the right curriculum and you want to get them ready, make sure they have all the tools they will need for a post-secondary education and making sure they get a proper education. But sometimes when we get so caught up in all this stuff, we actually lose our focus. And we lose the ultimate vision for them. And I know this can be very controversial. It's funny because even in a homeschool conference, this can be controversial, right? We're a Christian homeschool conference. We know what we're called to, right? But I just felt like this hasn't been talked about, which is why I'm talking about it. Titus 2, 3 to 5, the older woman, speaking to the older women, which I now am, teachers of good things. Actually, you guys, anybody who has someone younger than you, you're an older woman. So, right, you don't have to be old to be passing this on. You can be any age. You can be, you know, a 16-year-old and you have a younger sibling or another girl in your life. You can be starting to pass this on to them. It doesn't have to start when you're old and gray. So anyway, this is what's written here, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. I just had a little side note here that I wanted to point out was my own mom. I had mentioned that I wasn't taught to cook. That was really simply because she loved cooking. It wasn't that she wasn't teaching us anything. And well, my older sister did all the cooking. So I did the cleaning. So anyway, I felt like I suffered a little bit in that area. But what my mom really taught me was to learn to be content and to work diligently. Like, those were just the two things that stood out to me and still stand out to me all the time. And the other thing I wanted to say, there's two women that have really influenced me, my own mother, and then I've got my mother-in-law who is here today. My mother-in-law was a career woman and stepped away from all of that when we had this vision to start a family. So she was like a full-time grandma and I was a full-time mom. But she always, the part that sticks out to me always in my mind is that she always pointed me to Jesus. So you need the hands-on training, but you desperately need to be pointed to Jesus. If you don't have that, it's gonna be a rough go. She also came over and baked bread, and she actually is the one who taught me how to bake bread, because my mom didn't. And she read a lot of books to my children and so on. Elizabeth Elliot says, "We can't really tell how crooked our thinking is until we line it up with the straight edge of Scripture." Isn't that true? Just a few short decades ago, it was common knowledge that the role of motherhood and homemaking was of utmost importance. So how did we get here in our society? In short, it's the feminist movement that caused women to feel unhappy about their roles as homemakers. Now, this is something that was obviously already in their flesh, right? Our flesh always has the tendency to become dissatisfied with our roles, so this movement did nothing but wake up the sin of ingratitude in women. I won't go into a big history lesson about feminism, but it is important that we know how we came to a place in society where homemaking is looked down on. From the website for International Family Studies, I've got this little quote here. "The decline of homemaking, both as a term and a recognized skill, is the result of a popular understanding that homemaking skills are no longer needed, given the technological advances of the 20th and 21st centuries. Many have celebrated its demise, often as a victory for women." One commentator recently claimed that feminism and homemaking are fundamentally incompatible. "There is no version of American housewifery that has ever or will ever make women happier, healthier, or more fulfilled," she wrote. The driving force behind feminism was to make women happier. But now, overall, women are more unhappy than they were before this movement began. Interestingly, first wave feminists saw the value of homemaking and simply fought for women's rights, like voting rights. Second wave feminists lost that vision and attempted to do away with the skill of homemaking. The term homemaker was replaced with the term stay-at-home mom. We are so much more than mothers who simply stay at home. We are raising our children, loving our husbands, and serving others and creating a home. So why is homemaking under attack? This is why, because homemaking is precisely and directly in opposition to what the enemy is attempting to accomplish. When you think about it, mothers bring forth life. What does the Bible say the enemy is? He's a murderer. He is the opposite of that. Mothers lay down their lives, they give. What does the enemy do? He steals. Mothers hold things together, and by God's strength, we are builders. Satan is a destroyer. 1 Peter 5:8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, and that includes us moms. He's looking for the vulnerable people. I want to talk a little bit about how having this vision always leads us through a process, and that process is called sanctification. Sanctification simply means to be set apart for God and being conformed to His image. In simple terms, this is when what you know in your head makes its way down into your heart. And in that process, our many layers of selfishness are stripped away. God uses motherhood to change us into His likeness, and as we are changed, we are His image bearers to our daughters. As we become more Christ-like, we become more joy-filled. Gloria Furman says, "View motherhood as a gift from God to make you holy rather than as a role with tasks that get in your way. If you don't view it this way, you're missing out on one of God's ordained means of your spiritual growth. Not only that, but you're missing out on enjoying God." Not only does motherhood benefit your soul, it has the benefit to greatly impact your husband, and not only your husband, also your children, and not just your children, your grandchildren. Although marriage isn't the focus of this talk, we can't really be godly mothers and homemakers without a husband. So I'm just going to say for the mothers, pray for your daughters' future husbands, and there's a lot of young women in this room, pray for your future husbands, even though you don't know who they are. You don't have to pray by name, because you don't know. But I just wanted to share something about my story was that the Lord works in really mysterious ways, because when we got married, we did not talk about having children for at least 3 years. My husband pressured me relentlessly to find a job or a career or go to college. I was married at 19, so I was still college age. So I went on the pill and went on a search for a job or college training to find something that would fulfill me and satisfy him. Then one day the Lord convicted my husband and gave him a vision for children and homemaking. And just like that, I went off the pill, got pregnant soon after, and quit my job. My dream was finally coming true. And here we are, 30 years later and 14 children. I'm not saying y'all have to do that. I'm just saying follow what the Lord's saying to you and your husband. You need to obey Him. So I've got a few practical ways to pass on this vision for motherhood. Number one would be for mothers to be the inspiration. And you need to be renewed in your mind. How does our mind get renewed? I don't know a better way than to spend time in the Word and in spending time with the Lord. Put your mind on Christ and the things of Christ. Do you entertain thoughts about how much more fulfilled you could be elsewhere? I used to do that. Learn to take all these little nagging thoughts captive. 2 Corinthians 10:5, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. The battle must be won in your mind first. Then you will be able to walk in confidence and joy. This will become the springboard for your daughters. In order to pass something on, though, Like an inheritance, it must be yours first. This inheritance must rightly belong to you. Number two, this is the role of gatekeeping. Be very careful with what you allow your daughters to immerse their hearts and minds in, the books they read and the movies they watch. Ask yourself, what is the undercurrent here? Does this book or movie value motherhood and homemaking? Does it teach God's plan for the family? When our older kids were little, we used to let them watch the Berenstain Bears. I thought it was innocent enough. Until one day I was in the kitchen working and the kids were watching this Berenstain Bears episode in the living room, and I was just hearing the talking, and I thought, something doesn't sound right. And I realized that it's that episode, if any of you have seen it, episode where they go to the mall and Papa Bear gets lost. And they have to go find him, and he ends up being in the lost and found section where all the lost kids go, and he's sitting there eating a lollipop. And I thought, what is this garbage? Like, they're making this man look absolutely ridiculous and stupid. And so that was it. No more Berenstain Bears. I'm like, my kids don't need that. So be very careful with movies. I know it's a bit of a pain sometimes as mothers because we only have so much time in our lives to preview movies, pre-read books. Like, that's a lot of time. But I think usually you can get a general idea of what something's like. You can ask friends, read reviews and all that stuff. You can get a sense. And guess what? We have the Holy Spirit in us if we were born again, and he'll give us a sense, right? He'll give us peace for it if it's a good thing, and no peace if it's not. So I realized that was very, something I had to be very cautious about. For an example, give them baby dolls, like for toys, give them baby dolls. Be careful about today's dolls. There are so many dolls on the market that are literally a child could look at it and say, well, that's evil, right? So just be very careful about the things that you're letting them play with. Ask yourself, does this doll or toy or whatever look provocative? Will it cause discontentment in my daughter about her physical appearance? Is this doll a picture of a self-sufficient woman? This affects the shaping of their hearts. The dolls your girls play with can encourage a nurturing heart or plant a seed of desire to be self-sufficient and independent. Number three, value life. Speak highly about pregnancy and newborn babies. The arrival of a new baby in our home brought much joy. Since we had so many children, they would not all get to come to the hospital to meet the new one. But what a moment when Daddy proudly carried that car seat into the house and all the children would come and gather around and everyone was like, ooh, so cute, you know. That was always an amazingly joyful occasion. And in this light, on a more sober note, when the time is right, talk to them about abortion, because they need to know. They need to know, and that will give them if they see how you feel about it and what the truth is about it, that will give them a much firmer foundation on what they believe. If you have a loss, if you've lost a baby or a child or a pregnancy, try to talk about it with your daughters, because I think it's very good for them to actually sense your pain in it and your loss in it, because that speaks volumes to them about the value of that child, that early term pregnancy that you lost. Like, it's a huge part of building this in them. Number four, educating daughters does not clash with preparing them for homemaking. So we don't have to raise them and ignore all the math and science and social studies and English, right? Having a high esteem for the home means that you want your daughters to be highly capable and competent in a broad range of skills. So I think I always tell my daughters to, math is important, right? You're gonna use it. And what about when you're raising your children? Who's gonna teach them? Well, if you're gonna be homeschooling, you're gonna need to know some of the stuff, and then they say, well, I'm just gonna learn it with my kids. Like, no, it's much easier if you learn it first. As Rachel Jankovic says, education and the domestic arts are friends. And she gives an example of knowing girls who were just going to be wives and mothers. not knowing enough math to be able to come up with a new recipe or make a quilt. There's the term again, just a mother. Don't ever use that when instilling this vision in your daughters. Always speak about homemaking as an awesome privilege. Number five, encourage creativity and entrepreneurial skills. I can never say that word. Train them to be diligent and hardworking and keep them busy. Here's a few examples of what our girls have done. So we've got 5th one graduating this year for the girls. So Rochelle, who's going to be speaking a little bit later, she did some of her post-high school years. She took a short apparel design course, and she's using that skill now to design clothing and selling the clothes. She had an Etsy shop. She was doing making quilts and selling them, and the skills she learned were sewing, managing an online business, healthcare aid. She did that as well, healthcare aid. A lot of these very hands-on type of skills that she learned in the home and in the neighborhood. Ilana, who is in here somewhere, right there, she has built her own dog breeding business. Always loved dogs, always loved animals, and loves nutrition and health and all that stuff. So she has built a successful dog breeding business. The skills she has learned would be nutrition and health, reproductive health, online business, time management, and photography. Melody is another one of our graduated daughters. She is very artistic, and she bakes sourdough bread and sells it at markets. And she does videography. And Krista, the next one, she's also does all the baking, sourdough baking, and selling at markets and stuff like that. So there's so many things that your daughters can do. You don't have to send them to post-secondary. You know, if the ultimate dream and vision is to be a homemaker, focus on those skills to keep them going in that direction. Number six, pursue friendship with your children. Have fun with them. Play games. Take them shopping. Cook and bake with them. Plan gatherings. Don't be boring. Krista had asked me a couple weeks ago, oh, Mom, can you take me driving? She flies her drone. She likes to do videography with her drone. She said, Mom, can you take me driving? I really want to go see the deer out in the fields. And I was like, I just want to put my feet up. But I thought, no, I can't be boring. So it was a good memory. Number seven, teach them to serve others, as in singing in a senior's home, deliver treats to neighbors, plan gatherings in your home. So then if you plan a gathering, you can involve them in all the steps of planning. You can make invitations, you can make the guest list, you can plan the activities, all these different things you can do. I encourage my girls to pretend our home is their future home. Look for things that need doing and for ways to serve. Learn contentment in this season at home, and you will be able to step into homemaking with confidence and joy. Number eight, and the final point, train them to be self-controlled. Not to stifle the emotions, but to rule over them. Proverbs 25:28, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. Encourage them strongly not to get into the habit of moping and pouting. Pouting is simply a fleshly indulgence and can feel good at first, but quickly spirals into a nasty pit. Hormones do play an effect, you know that. So we do need to be considerate of that. And if there's a real hormone imbalance, it can come out in all sorts of ways, bad attitudes, physical pain, just a wide range of symptoms. So I would say if there is a serious hormone imbalance going on, find some help. There's a lot of natural helps out there for balancing hormones, and it's super important because you don't want to be dealing with that. Anyways, so I just want to introduce my daughter, Rochelle. I am honored and blessed to have Rochelle join me here today. She is the sweet fruit of my labor, of this vision that the Lord gave us all those years ago. She embraces her calling with a quiet and content spirit. So here's Rochelle. Thanks. It's been really fun to be able to do this talk with my mom. I'm going to use this right here. So, hello everybody. My name is Rochelle Lawrenson, and I married my husband Mercer in August of 2020. So we have two kids so far. Boaz is 2, and Shira is going to be 1 in May. So yeah, we are really enjoying our family so far. And yeah, growing up, I really always wanted to be a wife and a mother. And definitely, I can actually say it's better than I thought it would be. I was expecting it to be great, but I'm just enjoying it so much. And so today, I want to share some stories and examples from my growing up years. I really feel like my parents did a good job of preparing me and helping me to just value motherhood, value homemaking. And so I want to just go through some stories from my growing up years in hopes that it will be an encouragement and an inspiration and just, yeah, encouraging for you guys. Okay, so I would say the most defining feature of my family growing up is that we were a big family. I can remember instances of bumping along in our 15-passenger van, looking out the windows and seeing people who'd be just nodding their heads trying to count us all. So, as the oldest of 14 kids, I definitely had a lot of natural responsibility, I felt. And I think most oldest would feel that way. And that's really, a lot of it's just very natural and good. I really appreciate, though, how my parents were very intentional to keep me from feeling like I had to do so much work and I had so much responsibility as the oldest. They really tried to give me the freedom to have time to do things and even out the work amongst the kids. Obviously, I had to do more work than some because I'm the oldest and that's just what God had for me, right? But I really think it's so important for parents to keep that in mind that we as parents don't want to put on our children the burden of parenting that is only ours to carry. So yeah, I really appreciate that about my parents because I really did not resent, I resented. But you know, if you have the right attitude overall, the right heart overall, you don't dwell on those things. You move on, you see past that, right? So responsibility without resentment. And yeah, now that I'm having my own home, being a wife and mother, I really tend to place a lot of value in being productive and having my house organized, clean, beautiful. I think we all can relate, but as I'm sure we can all relate as well, we tend to sometimes see all the things that we want to do and need to do, and it's like, oh, this is so much, I don't know if I can do it all. And when I think that way, I find it really helpful to remember times from my childhood. When I was growing up, we lived in a very tiny house that had sewage problems, mold issues, and was right on a busy highway, like totally not the ideal living situation. But I hardly remember those things, like, because I was just having a blast. I was living my life being a child, and I sincerely felt like I had the best childhood. And I'm sure it was difficult for my mom at times dealing with those things. But the things that I remember most from my childhood are not, oh, how clean the house was and how updated the furniture was and the decor, but I was always watching my mom to see what her attitude was, what her words were. And so when my mom would be going through something tough, sad, a little grumpy maybe, it just made everything feel so much harder and sad as a child. And then when my mom would be happy and cheerful, I just was like, oh, no, everything's okay. It doesn't matter if, you know, stuff is actually not going very well. If mom's happy, it's all going to be just fine. So I try to keep that in mind now as I have my own children is, okay, my children are gonna watch me for my response. If there's a stain on the carpet, if there's something I'd love to change but I actually can't, if there's just problems and I'm grumbling and complaining about them, my kids aren't gonna think about the things I'm grumbling about. They're gonna just be looking at me and like, oh, mom's not happy and oh, this is, you know, I really want to, yeah, just encourage you to, and myself to just remember that our children are watching us and watching for our smiles. So my family has always eaten meals at the table together. I think that's really important. But my dad would often read the Bible to us while we were still sitting together. And so growing up, I would say that my parents really helped to shape and, yeah, help me to love the Lord and to value his word, to put value in God's word, the Bible, instead of maybe like just what the culture is saying out there. And so that was definitely a huge influence in my ways of thinking. I have a Bible here to hold up, this book. So definitely really am thankful for my parents' encouragement in that area and just the influence. And then the other books we read as well were a huge influence. I read a lot as a child. I think the first book I read was The Little House on the Prairie. I think most people and most homeschoolers would agree that the Little House on the Prairie series is one of the best resources for homeschoolers in so many different ways. But specifically, I want to say it's just an excellent example of a loving mother and a strong family. And so the books that I read were a huge impact on me. And my mom, of course, was a huge impact on me as well. And I don't think my mom talked very much about the importance of homemaking and family and motherhood as much as she just lived it and showed it. And so, yeah, I'm just very thankful for that. And I guess overall, when I think back into like, why do I think the way I think now? Usually when we're being influenced, we're not like, okay, this is gonna influence me, or I wanna be influenced by this thing. We're usually, when we're young, we're just taking in, being influenced by whatever we are being exposed to. And so I think a lot of the resources and things I was exposed to just helped me to naturally view motherhood and homemaking as the obvious goal for my future. So the fall that I was 12, I noticed that a lot of the teenagers seemed to be wearing plaid hoodies. It was like the thing. And I was like, okay, I guess I need to get one too. I wanted to fit in. And so we went to Value Village and I found a dark gray plaid hoodie. It wasn't exactly my like dream, but when you go to thrift stores, you don't have all the options. So like, okay, this will be it. I think I wore that hoodie every Sunday for like 2 weeks. I was like, I'm cool now. And then another thing is side bangs. It seemed like all the girls were getting side bangs. I was like, okay, I need to get these too. And so I remember getting my side bangs cut, and it was great for the first little while. Like, okay, I look so cool, and I look like everybody else, which is exactly what I want, and apparently. And for a little while it was great, but then it kind of wears off, and you think, okay, what do I need to do to look better, to feel better about myself? And my mom was really, really helpful in just gently talking to me about contentment and placing value in the things that matter most. And so I really, really think that as mothers, as joyful mothers, it is essential that we are content and grateful, because it's gonna be so just miserable for us and for our children if we're not thankful and we're not content. And I think the younger that we can learn that, the easier it will be for us in the future. So I just wanted to share another book that I think I read it when I was 16. It's Kisses from Katie by Katie Davis Majors. And it's a story of a young girl who she grew up a normal life in the US and ended up moving to Africa at the age of 18 and ended up adopting 14 girls. And I just found it so encouraging and inspiring when I was in my teens, because here was a girl who had popularity, who had a boyfriend, who had success and beauty and all these things that are often valued, but she loved God so much and she loved people so much, and she just felt this burden for people who were far away from her, that she just gave up everything and went. And I just found that so inspiring when I was growing up. So, moving on. One of the most practical ways of preparing our daughters, I think we often think of, is teaching our daughters how to cook. So, as my mom has already said, she entered marriage with maybe less than satisfactory cooking skills. So she was determined that we would all learn how to cook. And so she tried to teach me, but I absolutely hated cooking for most of my teen years. For a long time, I could only make two things, spaghetti and pancakes. And my younger brother, he could cook more than I could. And I was like, that's totally fine with me. There were so many other interesting things to do. So I remember telling my mom, I will learn to cook when I'm in a relationship. Like when I can see I'm gonna get married and it's right there, I'll learn then. She's like, Rochelle, that's just not the right way to think. And of course she was right. So when I was 19, I went to a discipleship school for a few months, came home, and I just had a new excitement for like learning and growing in my abilities. And so at that point I did learn how to cook and I've enjoyed it since. So now that I cook, you know, as mothers and homemakers, you're cooking all the time, it can really start to feel like, oh wow, this is just never ending, it's always cooking. And something I've been thinking more about lately is cooking is so much more than just putting food together for your family to eat. When you cook, you create, you're making a meal. And then when you eat that meal together as a family, you're now you're opening an opportunity for your family to spend time together talking. You can teach your kids, you can read aloud, you can have discussions. You can build your family culture at the table. And so that's just really inspired me and helped me to feel like it's not so mundane and like, oh, I'm just, no, one more time, I gotta eat again. Why do I have to cook all the time, you know? It's so important, it's so much more than making food. And I have one more book I wanna talk about on that subject. I just recently read this book by Sally Clarkson. It's The Life-Giving Table. And she talks about how her family was just built around their dinner table. And not that you have to set the table fancy, make gourmet food. She said anything you cook, anything you serve, you can foster this environment of discussion and learning and growth. And you can really shape the way your family thinks and the way your family acts just by how you navigate that mealtime. So that's been very inspiring for me. So after high school, I struggled with knowing what to do. So I think that's a pretty common experience for people. I really tried not to compare myself to girls who were taking university classes or just seemed to know exactly what they wanted to do, or just got married, because like I wanted to get married as soon as I graduated. But as it is for many girls, it didn't happen that way for me, and now I'm so thankful that God had better plans. But it can be terrifying when you really want something that you think is your calling in life, or at least for most of your life, and it's not happening yet. It's like, it can be scary, and like, what do you do in the meantime? And so I found it very helpful to keep myself busy with meaningful, productive work. And so my mom has already mentioned some of the things that I did. I went to Bible training. I worked at camp. I had my little business at home. I helped my mom. I homeschooled some of my siblings. I just, yeah, did a number of things like that to keep myself busy. And looking back now, I've realized more and more that it's not nearly as important what you do as why you do it and how you do it. And I've, yeah, just learned that every time I've taken a step with the desire to grow, to learn more skills, and to serve others and honor the Lord, that experience has matured and prepared me for my future. And so I think it's a very freeing thought when you take life from that perspective of there's so many things you can do and there's so much freedom in deciding as long as you know that the Lord will be honored by it and it's going to be good and serving to others. I mean, the other thing I want to mention is the thing that helped me the most in my life. This is not just pertaining to motherhood and homemaking, but specifically in this context, the thing that helped me the most in my life is stepping out of my comfort zone. So spiritually, but all other ways too. And so some of the best things that I did to help me was camp, working at camp. A lot of people are like growing up at camp, going to camp. I never stepped foot on a camp until I was 20. And I was like, what is this? But it was amazing because it just took me so far out of my comfort zone. And it just grew my grace, understanding of people and desire to serve others, and abilities in communicating with people I wouldn't normally talk to. And it was just such an amazing experience. So I wanna, just talk to the young women in here who are kind of facing that. Maybe someone knows, maybe you have plans, more plans than I did, and that's totally great. But I would encourage all the young women in here to don't stick to your comfort zone. Don't just try to have, see the value in wanting to learn, wanting to grow, wanting to expand, not keeping yourself within this boundary. And I was a naturally fearful person, and so my maybe boundary of comfort was smaller than a lot of people, but I found that as I have stepped out in faith, knowing that God is going to help me and show me things and teach me, it's just been amazing in my life. And so I would just encourage all the young people in here to, if there's a step you think you should make or do that you're being held back because you're afraid, just do it. And you will never regret it. So, as well, I'd like to say to the mothers, like, it can be hard to let our daughters do things that are scary. And I'm not talking about dangerous or foolish things. I'm talking about things that just have a little bit of risk or just feel scary for whatever reason. And I would just say, try to encourage your daughters to step out of their comfort zones, to increase their abilities in areas that aren't naturally easy for them, because that will prepare them for motherhood and homemaking. The best way you can be a mother is to have that strength of, like, taking a step, not being afraid. If your life is ruled by fear, you're really going to be limited in so many ways, and there's so much that God wants to do in us. So now that I'm a mother, I want to, above all, teach my daughters to love the Lord. I think it really comes down to that, wanting our daughters to love the Lord, and as a result, to love the calling of intentional motherhood. And so that seems, I'm sure it can seem like a lot to do sometimes, but there's so much hope because God is for us, and God will supply all our need through his riches in Christ Jesus. And so I just thank you all for listening today. I'm going to hand it back to my mom now.
Yeah, I remember when Rochelle went to camp at age 20. The camp told us afterwards, told her later on, that first week she was at camp, this was Gimli Bible Camp, that first week she was at camp, and the cabin that she was in was the most difficult cabin I think they had ever had in their history. So that gives you an idea that she was out of her comfort zone, big time. But she came home after that week, she walked into the house and she sat down on the couch and she collected all her younger siblings and wrapped them all into a big hug. And she's like, you guys are angels. She just couldn't believe there were kids like that out there. But yeah, I just wanted to wrap up. I'm gonna try and be brief because we're almost at the 2 o'clock mark here. But I just wanted to say, seasons of motherhood can change so much over the years, but he is faithful and never leaves us and never forsakes us. I am learning that even in those winter seasons, I don't have to stress. I think any time that we find ourselves stressing even about our spiritual walk, you know what that means? That means our eyes aren't on the Lord. Our eyes are still on ourselves and on our circumstances. That's not resting. So we need to learn to keep our eyes on him and not on ourselves. When the heaviness overwhelms me and steals my joy, I have learned that I must take time to cry it all out to him. Only then does my joy return. The book of Psalms is a great place to start when our hearts need encouragement. Jeremiah 29:13, we all know that verse. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. So keep your eyes on Jesus. Some seasons are light and fulfilling. Just rejoice in that. But still, keep your eyes on Jesus. As C.S. Lewis said, you can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending. We as mothers have the freedom to choose joy beginning today. Homemaking is a calling that is countercultural in a world that seems hell-bent on wiping it out. But we serve a faithful God. When you see the utmost importance of your calling, you draw your strength from the Lord and you stand. and stand you must, for the sake of your children and for the sake of the kingdom. As Joanne Clancy says, be the kind of woman who, when your feet hit the floor each morning, the devil says, oh no, she's up. And that's the end. Thank you all for coming. Are we going to do questions or no? If we have a few minutes, if you guys have any questions, I'll try to answer. I don't know if I have any answers, but I'm open to trying. I know. Yes?
I'm wondering what advice you might give to dads and moms about encouraging the sons.
That's a whole other session. Maybe next year I'll talk about that. Or maybe my husband. Because I'm not trying to preach to men here.
No.
Right?
But as mothers to sons, I guess I'm just wondering.
Mothers to sons. Yeah, and I think it's modeled to the sons in the same way as it is modeled to the daughters. I think when you are a joyful mother, the sons are going to desire to marry someone with that same heart and vision. So I think that kind of takes care of itself the same way. Yeah. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you all for coming. Hope you're encouraged.